Welcome to our Unclenched podcast. We have a very special guest today, Dr. Mack Lee. He is the author of Life-Robbing Pain of TMD, Why Me? And hang out for a little bit later. We're going to get to some questions. We got a lot of questions, and hopefully Dr. Mack Lee will jump in and help us answer some. But first, I want to get caught up with Priya. How's that pretty lady in Washington doing? What's going on?
Oh my gosh, I'm so good. I'm so busy. Like I think I've mentioned my kids are 5 and 7, so there's always a lot going on. My daughter, though, I'm excited about. She is starting in MyoBrace. So she was born with her mandible pretty far back, and she, poor thing, she's a TMJ case waiting to happen. So she's the one that's 7 years old now, and she's very motivated to actually do this, and she's really excited. So she's been wearing it about an hour every day. We're going to probably up that to 2 during the day, and then overnight, she's actually been taking it out in the middle of the night. So I'm kind of interested to see how that's going to go. The distributor told me that that's actually pretty normal at the beginning.
Sure.
So don't be shocked. And it's, for those of you who don't know what MyoBrace is, it's an appliance that can be worn at night. And maybe we can display a picture of it. We'll talk to the editor about that so you guys can see it. It's not a custom fit. With children, we can't have a custom fit because their teeth are wiggling and jiggling and coming out and growing in. There's too much going on. So
too much change.
Too much change. But it helps with expansion and airway volume and lots of different things. And so I'm eager to get her going on this. And so that's the newest thing with me. So what's going on with you, Alex?
That's fun. First, with that MyoBrace, we've had a couple patients in that, and it has worked well. And it's just kind of a guide to help things kind of mold. And like you said, that might be something that we'll talk about down the road more in depth. But with me, things have been great. I mean, I can't believe that it's already February. And last month, my husband and I were able to get away, and we went to Charleston, South Carolina for a little bit. It was a little bit chilly there, but the sun was out. So I was soaking up that, like, just good grounding with the earth and the sand. And we were on Kiowa Island. So we had a great, great time. And haven't seen my kids yet because they're grown and out of the house. But in March, we're going to all be together. So I'm excited for that.
Oh, nice. Where do your kids live?
My kids, one is in New York, and she is a financial consultant for Ernst & Young. And she is living it up on Fifth Avenue and having the time of her life, really. And then my other daughter is in Louisville. She is in her third year of dental school there. So I'm kind of keeping my fingers crossed without putting pressure on her to come work with me, because what you and I do, not a whole lot of people do or understand. So that's hence the reason why we're doing this broadcast for, you know, patients, dentists, students, anybody that wants to know. We're here to help you try to understand what's going on with TMD. So that's about that for me. But I have to tell you, I was driving past, every day I go to work, I drive past this cemetery. And I've told my kids, this is where you can bury me. And you don't even have to get out of the car, just honk and wave, and I'll be there, you know. But it reminded me of a patient of mine, and he's been on my mind, he and his wife, because his wife, they were patients, they were like my OG patients from the very original. And he and his wife, they're just great. And I was in general practice in the beginning of my practice. And then when I funneled to TMD, of course, all my general patients, I had to refer to other general doctors or general dentists. So I thought of them because one of her favorite things to do is to go through graveyards. And she looks at the tombstones and tries to look up the people and see what's what. And so I was thinking of Terry because he was my original. And then about 20 years later, he shows up at my door with horrific pain on his left side, numbness. He couldn't even shave. He was diagnosed with trigeminal neuralgia. He had to stop work. And it was just a mess. I felt so bad for him, but he came to the office and we fit him with a fixed orthotic. I know you do a lot of removables. I do both removable and fixed. Fixed orthotic is one that the patient cannot take out. I know you know that, but they can't take it out. They can't take it out to clean. We give them special cleaning things, but that way I know that they're wearing it 24/7. So I do a ton of those. And they can't say like, oh, I took it out to eat and then I forgot to put it back in. So that's where I get my best results. And especially with him in such horrific pain. I mean, he would cry like a baby. I mean, it was so sad. So I started TMD work on him. I put the orthotic in. We got him out of pain. And one time, though, he came to my office and he was in pain. It was on a Saturday. And I said, I'm going to go to hot yoga. I might be a little smelly. You're not going to see me looking great. I'll be there right after. He's like, Alex, I don't care. I am just, this is killing me. So I laid him on the floor of the hallway. And he's on his back. So he's facing up. And I get behind him and I kind of straddle his head. I know this is weird. And I'm pulling his head and I'm rubbing his shoulders and rubbing his neck and trying to get rid of the trigger points.
Yes. Yes.
And then my husband walks in.
Oh,
so Saturday, no one's there. My husband walks in. He's walking down. He's like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
And I said, this is Terry. Terry, this is my husband, John. I'm trying to loosen up some muscles and get him out of pain. And my husband just shakes his head because he doesn't quite understand what I do because he's in finance. So that was the patient that was just on my mind a lot this week, because when I drive by that graveyard, I think of Deb. And then I think of Terry and all the pain he was in, which he's not in now. And I saw him a few months back, but after his pain, we went through ortho, straightened all his teeth, got his bite right like that. So he's not wearing any appliances.
Nice.
And he's free. But he did a testimonial for me before, and he's like, I cried like a baby. He said, I'm a grown man, but I was crying. But it was so great. It was so great. So, you know, I just,
that's lovely.
Has anybody been on your mind this week?
Yeah, I have this lovely patient, but before I go into her, I do have a few questions for you. How quickly did Terry get out of pain once you gave him the fixed orthotic?
2 months. I just looked at his records, 2 months. And he had MRIs. Yes. He had been to neurologists. Yes. He was on gabapentin, Neurontin, like a whole host of things. And he's like, Alex, man, I don't want to take these drugs.
Yeah.
And we did a bunch of like stretches. He went to PT, which I had to do too, because I couldn't do it all. And Lord knows I couldn't put him on the floor when I had real patients in the office. That was a Saturday. So we left out. But so he's been pain free now, and it's been probably, I was looking at his notes because I was thinking so much about him. It's probably been about 4 years out of ortho now, and he's still doing great.
Wow, that is
which
so
I don't
great.
Expect him not to do great. I know, but he had root canals done. They didn't know where the pain was coming from. You know how that spirals.
So I've seen that so much. And that day, did you find the trigger point? Sorry, last question.
Oh yeah. 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 I mean, they're like, and I'm the type that I'm like, oh, I got it. And I just like got to press on it. And I'm like, and you feel it like under my finger, I could just feel it start to release. And he's like, oh, that's it. And then my husband's hearing this, oh, I got it. And oh, that's it in the back room. And I don't even know what he was thinking.
But I know.
It was funny. We laugh about that now.
I hear you. I mean, my husband's a dentist, but he's a general dentist, right? And so he understands what I do fully, but like, I think he would also be a little surprised at some of the noises that happen in our office when people feel relief, to be fair. But the patient that's sort of been on my mind, she's so sweet. She's so lovely. Her name is Layla, and she came to me at the beginning of November. So when she came to me, she was locking closed. Her jaw was locking on and off. Like it would lock and then unlock and lock and unlock. And so what that means was the little disc of cartilage was coming in and out of alignment. And usually when that's happening frequently, where it's kind of getting locked, where the disc is actually dislocated for an amount of time, and then it's like unlocking, that usually means that disc is very unstable, and that's going to lead to it locking where she can't unlock it. That's what, where it usually goes, right? So she was locking closed, clicking, popping. She had severe jaw pain when she was sleeping. And she had these temple headaches that were very uncomfortable, and they were happening once or twice a week. So I just saw her yesterday. So she started at the beginning of November. It's now like beginning of February. And none of those symptoms remain. She's not locking. She's not clicking. Priya. She's not popping. There's no pain. There's no headaches. And it's just so gratifying. Like, she's doing so much better, and it's so exciting.
You know, it really is. And how old was Layla?
So she's 17. She's super young.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
But she's not my youngest patient. I have in.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy. Oh my God. You just changed her life and let her get back into school and everything.
I love it. That's awesome. It so much. And with her, we use removable orthotics. But, you know, the catch with me is that she has to be dependent on that nighttime orthotic forever or get ortho, right?
Correct.
And so there's that catch. And I don't do any phase two because I'm just not trained in it. And so that's something I'm looking to either have my husband do, get trained in, or me do, whatever. But because I think ultimately that's like the ultimate fix. To not have to be dependent on an orthotic would be great. So, that's my story.
You know, and that'll all come, you know. Yeah. But let's get started. I think we have Mac Lee somewhere here. Mac is from Edna, Texas. And Mac is the author of Life-Robbing Pain of TMD, Why Me? Because this can be, just like with Layla, if Priya didn't get in there, it can be life-robbing pain. That's for sure. We see it all the time. And so how did you meet Mac Lee, Priya? Because I know when we were talking about having guests on, you're like, yeah, Mac Lee. So how did you meet him?
Mac Lee. Mac actually reached out to me based off of one of my YouTube videos. So he saw my video, how to take an aqualizer bite. And he said, hey, do you mind meeting on FaceTime and talking about this method, but like an altered way to do it? And he was just so kind. And I could tell the way he sort of brought it about, he wasn't going to just mansplain.
right.
To do that. So Mac, thank you for reaching out to me.
Yeah. So let me tell you about me and Mac Lee. So we met at Mac, it's been like 2010 or something like that. We did a TMD mini residency in West Virginia. And Mac might have just been starting to dabble with TMD or early on, but obviously he's been practicing a long time and he'll get to that. But when I met Mac, I thought, who is this Southern boy? He's a little, you know, farmer. You know what I mean? That's what he reminds me of. And I love him to death. And he put everything in such an easy way to understand. He just kind of simplified it and made it so simple. And when I would do consults in my practice, I would get so excited because I had all this machinery. I had this K7. I'm reading EMGs. I'm looking at this. I'm trying to show patients a little squiggly line, and they just glaze over. And then I had Mac come to my office, and I'm like, Mac, he came with his one of his girls, Jolene, sweet Jolene, love her, and came to my office and taught me more how to talk to patients and just like get out of the doctor, kind of be normal and be able to relate and talk to these patients. So I so appreciate he and Jolene, and I appreciate him writing this book because it puts everything so simple. And Mac, so how did you get into all of this? Because you've been practicing I hate to say it, but you do look older than me. So you've been practicing a lot longer than I have. And you just recently retired, but you're still involved. But how did you get into all of this neuromuscular business?
Oh, well, first of all, you want to talk about the book or neuromuscular?
I want to talk about your story and then what made you prompt to get to write the book.
Okay, so my story is that I graduated in 1972, long, long time ago. And for 5 years, I hated dentistry. I lived in this little farming community, ranching community. And all I did was big amalgams and economy partials and extractions. And I just absolutely hated it. And my brother convinced me to go to the Pankey Institute in Florida. And so I went for a week. I'd never been away from home. It was very traumatic. But once I saw what the Pankey Institute had to offer and the doctors that were there, the master doctors, Dr. Pankey, Dr. Tanner, et cetera, I was just fueled with excitement. And I was so excited, I changed my airplane ticket from coach.
Tell the people, though, because we have some patients on here, they don't know what Pankey is. So what is Pankey Institute?
First of all, there's no dental school in my time and very few today that teach anything about TMD. And so dentistry's kind of failed the public and being able to explain all the wonderful benefits that dentistry has. So to fill that void, Dr. Pankey and people like him who found the answers to these complicated cases, mostly restoring dentistry, not so much pain, they devised post-op seminars and educational centers that you could go to. And okay. So this was at the old DuPont Hotel in Miami, and it was just fascinating. At nighttime, we would go to lab, we'd make our orthotics, we'd put them on articulators, we'd adjust them, we'd do all these things. And it was just mind-boggling. And I got so excited that coming home, I changed my airplane to first class, which I've never flown first class. And my wife was waiting and waiting and waiting for me to get off the airplane. And two stewardesses had to drag me off the plane because I didn't know they had free booze on first class. And I was excited. And Alex, you know me, if I get excited, things happen. So anyway, that was my beginning. And then I went to Dawson, which is Pete Dawson, Dawson Center. And he's probably very well known across the world. And we became friends and worked together. And then the John Coyce, I had him do my teeth. So I really took continuing education IV'd it. And in like 10 years, I completed all of Dawson, Coyce, and Pankey. And for those listening, the dentists that are listening, I highly, highly, highly encourage you to find you some group of dentists that think alike. And so the three of us are with ICMO right now, and that's mm-hmm. where we're doing our work. So that's the International College of Craniomandibular Orthopedic. And what you've been talking about up till now is orthopedics. And I wish I would have learned this a long, long time ago. I did not get into my neuromuscular journey until about almost 20 years ago. And back in 1977, I could equilibrate a mouth as well as somebody does now with the DTR. You equilibrate the mouth with the T-scan. Well, I didn't have the T-scan, but I was excellent at equilibrating the mouth. And so the only difference between CR dentistry that I learned back then and neuromuscular dentistry today is the way the relationship between the upper and lower jaw.
And so what is CR dentistry?
Yeah, maybe explain that for our viewers.
Yeah, it's supposed to be centric relation of the joint. So you have your mandibular fossa and you have your joint. And it was rearmost, uppermost, which puts it too far back into the joint. And so what I learned over the years is that is too far back, and the joint needs to be in a neutral position to where it can function and be lubricated and all the nice things with the disc sitting on top and all the things that we know that seem to be very confusing to everybody. But let me tell you, And Alex, you know me, I've got to make things simple and for me to be able to understand it. But it's either going to be a joint problem or a muscle problem or a disc problem or the combination thereof. And then you just have to take each one as a segment. Is it a joint problem? No. Okay, well, then it's a muscular problem. Well, if it's just a muscular problem, then they probably the relationship between the upper jaw and the lower jaw is probably okay. But when you start getting C-worn teeth and you start seeing condyles that are pushed back and they're getting deformed and you start hearing clicking joints, that's because that maxilla is too far back and the jaw cannot go this way. The jaw can, when the jaw closes, if it's not pulled back, you're only going to hit the front teeth. Why is there so much anterior wear?
Right. Why? Right.
Because that's where the patient wants to be. Mm-hmm. And then when you use the fancy equipment that we do to relax the muscles and then use the EMGs and the jaw tracker, when I saw a jaw tracker and I saw the patient deviate and go like this, my whole world changed. Mm-hmm. I saw where, because if Panky and Dossman taught me how to help some people with headaches, and I was doing a midpoint, which Alex is like the NTI. I was doing an midpoint in 1977. So what did that do? You put a piece of plastic here and you're taking away all of the posterior interferences. Very simple. And it works, but it doesn't work if you've got a joint problem and that joint needs to come forward.
Sure.
So that's kind of a summary of my dental career. And I've loved dentistry. And do I miss it? I do miss talking to the patients and having the patient encounters like you're talked about earlier. But I'm having a very nice time doing what I'm doing when I want to do it, if I want to do it. So it's been great.
Well,
as far as the book is concerned.
Yes, that's where I was going.
The book. Okay. In 1990, I was a co-founder of Dental Bootcamp with Walter Haley, with Jolene, with Steve Anderson. And we had a seminar that y'all are too young to know about it, but it just took the continuing education world by storm. And what we taught was how to simply communicate, like we taught you, Alex, when we came to your office.
Right.
And so we did that for 7 years. I was on the road for 7 years. 1 year we had 32 weekends of seminars. And so I would leave on Thursday and I would come back on Sunday night and go to work on Monday. And I did that for 7 years. And it got to be a little bit too much. And the company I was with, we kind of fell out. So we left. And then people started calling me to come in to help them implement like we did in your office. But what I really learned is that the public has no clue what we do as dentists. They have no clue. So Jolene and another woman got together and wrote a book called Nothing Personal, Doc, But I Hate Dentists. The book didn't sell well, but the purpose of the book was to educate the public. Mm-hmm. It didn't sell well, but it did get me on the Discovery Channel with Dr. Oz and then Oprah XM with Dr. Oz. And I was his dental consultant for a while until he got his The Dr. Oz Show. And when he would say something wrong in dentistry, I would get in touch with the producer and say, that is incorrect. I fell out of favor real quick. So then they cut me off and I was no longer an advisor. They didn't like me telling Dr. Oz that he was wrong. So but anyway.
With Dr. Oz too in Pittsburgh.
You did?
Oh, that's right.
I did. You're talking about that. 10 years ago.
I didn't know any of this about either of you.
So anyway, I've been around so long. You know, I've been around so long, things happen. I mean, what can you say? 50 years of dentistry. But the book is to educate the public, because how many times have y'all heard a patient say, damn, how come nobody's told me this before? You hear it all of the time. When you listen to them and you sit down and you get heart to heart with them and you explain the muscles and you explain the joints, you explain the disc, and they go, nobody's ever told me. How come nobody's ever told me? And this is universal. I mean, I've had Zoom conferences with Syria, Israel, all over the world, London, and it's the same. The patients are saying the same. They have the same problems. It's the same. So what I'm so proud of ICMO is what we're trying to do is get all these different camps, the Dawson camp, the American Academy of Oral Facial Pain, get all these different camps together where we're working together instead of saying my way is the best way.
I love that you're doing that, Dr.
The public has to know that dentistry is trying to work together for their benefit, not our benefit, but their benefit.
I think you're really brave to take that on. I mean, there's a lot of egos involved in every camp. So whether you're in ICMO or AAOP or, and quite honestly, it kind of intimidates me. Like it, that would be a really hard thing to take on. So, and I'm not easily intimidated, but I think that that's great that you're doing that.
You just need about 50 plus years more of doing this and you really don't give a damn. Especially when you're retired. What are they going to do?
Nothing.
So that doesn't bother me at all. If I'm thinking about the public, it doesn't make any difference what they think.
That's true. I love
that. Go ahead, Alex.
How did you turn from a CR doctor pushing the jaw up and back to a neuromuscular doctor relaxing the muscles to take a bite in a more relaxed position? How did you come across that? How did you make that connection like something's missing?
During boot camp, Pete Dawson was a part of our group. So we spent lots of time with Pete Dawson. He even wanted to hire me to run some of his educational programs, but I did not do that. And I was in his office and Mac, get in the chair and let me do bilateral manipulation on you. And I was really good at bilateral manipulation. And he took me, now this takes guts, Priya, to talk about this because Dr. Dawson is the man and he's a wonderful thing for dentistry. But it was, what he did to me was so uncomfortable. And, you know, with a patient, you don't do things that are uncomfortable, you know, especially when they're coming to you in pain. And I was already dissatisfied with the bilateral manipulation because I wasn't getting all the results that I wanted. The real key is that for equilibrations, it was good, but for full mouth restorative, I ended up overclosing and trapping the mandible. Hear me real closely. If you use CR doctors, if you're trapping mandibles, and you got them locked in and you don't have joint space, they're not going to be happy no matter how beautiful the work is. Ask me how I know. Pete Dawson's lab man flew to Edna. I mean, I live out in the middle of nowhere. I'm 2 hours from Houston, Corpus, San Antonio, anywhere. He had to rent a car, come to my office, and he walked on Jolene using Dawson's protocol of bilateral manipulation. And please believe me, I know how to do bilateral manipulation. The case was beautiful. And you know Jolene, her teeth were itchy. And so she would get a scaler and clean her own teeth and almost destroyed her periodontium. Because she was trapped. And you've seen the pictures of her jaw being back and in the profile after we did the FMR, changing her profile, bringing the joint, bringing everything forward. But what got me turned was I was in Tom Hedges' office. He saw one of my cases, and you probably saw it too, because we went to his office and did an in-house consulting. And he saw this case that I did a la CR. And I saw him, and Tom's got the attention span of a gnat, but he was paying attention to this. And I'm thinking, if he's paying attention to this, he knows something I don't know, because I knew that the case was beautiful, but I also knew that the patient was uncomfortable, which she never got comfortable. And so when I told him that night at his house having a few drinks. And he said, you got to come to my office because I got to show you something that you're not aware of. And so I went when he had a TMD patient and hooked up to the K7. And when I saw that jaw trajectory go and then come back like this, the lights went on. And then I never stopped. I just hit neuromuscular full force like I do everything else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I like other CR dentists say, no, you can't always bring that condyle down and forward. You can't do that. That's not what we do. We bring it back to a neutral position to where it can operate freely. So that's one major message that I want to get across, the difference between CR and neuromuscular. We're not that far off. And as far as adjusting occlusion, we're exactly the same. It's just the joint position and the jaw-to-jaw relationship. Mm-hmm. Or an example, orthodontists still will not believe that patients have a deficient maxilla. I know. It's a big hurdle we're going to have to get over.
Right, right. And that's a whole other, why is the maxilla different? That's a whole other podcast, and we will get to that. I promise you that. But you wrote this book, Life Throbbing Pain of TMD, Why Me? Why did you write the book?
Because worldwide, people don't have a clue what's going on. And I wanted to make it real simple. And what I've learned, and thanks to Priya pushing it on Facebook and everything else, but what I learned from the TMD Facebook groups is that I didn't make it detailed enough. So I thought in my mind, in my simplistic thinking, that, you know, if you just showed the joint, the different joint positions, everybody would go, aha, but that's not the case. So I'm rewriting another book.
He's writing another book. But I do think that it's good that you wrote The Life-Robbing Pain of TMD and made it so simple. Because actually my patients, it's in every single operatory at my office and it's in the lobby and they all read it. And it's a quick read because you made it so simple.
It's a quick read.
It is.
And that's why I read it.
Yeah. And I think that to have Life-Robbing Pain of TMD, and then if you later make a more detailed one for the people that want all the details, because there are some that do and there are some that don't. So right. I actually think it's perfect if you're going to have two. And my patients love it. They're like, I learned so much just sitting here waiting for my appointment to start. Or I learned so much. Some people even just go out and buy it. And so it's such a great book, Mac. I mean, I
Thank
love
you.
It.
Thank
so
you.
I think the fact that you made it simple is actually good.
I was still practicing when I wrote it. And so people would read the book and then and make an appointment. And they already were ready to go. You didn't have to. I mean, they already pretty well knew what was going on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll be sure to link the book in like the YouTube description for the podcast and anywhere else that we can, because it's such a good book and such a quick read. And you just learned so much so fast. Yeah. Sorry, I can't help it. It's the social media person in me.
But, you know, I've really enjoyed writing the book. I write that with Jonathan Feshbaum. He's such a great guy. And, you know, I don't know about the two of you, but in 1968,
when I was four.
I was a freshman in dental school, and we had these cadavers. You know, we had about six or seven students per cadaver. And because I was from the country, I was elected to be the one that made the first cut. And I'm thinking, you know, we dissected every single muscle of the human body.
Yeah.
But we never learned anything about what the muscles do. So one of the things I'm talking about is we have parts. You have muscles, you have joints, you have jaw, you have this. But it's not the parts, it's the participation of the parts. Mm-hmm. And in dental school, even though we learned, spent a whole year dissecting this poor little old man and pulling out all the muscles and everything, we never learned about fascia. We never learned about muscle pain. We never learned about how they worked and how all of this worked. And it's a travesty. What a wasted opportunity.
So huge.
Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt, but when we were doing dissections, I just remember pushing the fascia out of the way. Like, this stuff is in the way.
Get to the muscle.
And I'm like, no, now I look
exactly.
back.
Exactly. Perfect point. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
That shows and everything.
And this is for you anti-hunters, this may be a put off, but the meat we eat is venison. And so I process my own venison. I have a ranch, harvest a deer, and process it beautifully. The meat is just absolutely delicious. But you got to cut out every bit of the fascia. And when you start seeing what a fascia does, when you start dissecting fascia instead of dissecting muscles, your whole world opens up, because we're just one sack of fascia running all the way from the top of our head to the bottom of our feet. But unless you've seen the internal organs and how they're held in place with fascia, it is fascinating. Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating world. It keeps me still excited about things.
Sure.
Yes.
Sure.
I was going to say, do you think we should get to a couple of the listeners' questions, or did you have?
Nope. I think that's great. That's great.
Perfect. Well, here's one question. So I'm going to say the question, Mac, and then you get to answer.
There we go.
Here's the question. Why does one side of my face look and feel swollen? Sometimes it looks like I had a stroke. Please explain.
Well, let me ask you this. Let's make it simple. There's a lot of things. You can have edema. You can have neurological issues going on. But if you go to the gym and all you do is you work out and you work on your biceps and you only work out one arm, what's going to happen? You're going to have one arm bigger than the other. So the same thing happens, especially in the masseter and in the temporalis. You can see people that are clenching all the time, and you can see on both sides. Even now, they have a little exercise thing for you to be masculine so that you can build up your masseter muscles on both sides. But if you're only doing it on one side, then only one side of the muscles are going to grow. That's my simplistic view of the situation. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if your jaw is a little bit torqued or angled, the muscles on the one side are tighter, working more, building up more, just like Max said, with the one bicep working more. So you totally look out of proportion. And I see that a lot. I'm sure you see that too.
Yeah.
So it's all about getting the balance and getting both sides to work together at the same rate and time. Mm-hmm. So that was a good question.
If you have a porch swing and one of the chains is longer than the other, then the porch swing is going to be like so. Okay. So This is the ramus of the mandible, which is kind of like a long bone, and it can have growth spurts. So if you have a growth spurt over here and not one over here, you've got a porch swing that's got one chain longer than the other. Mm-hmm. And that creates obvious problems. The body is no longer in harmony.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that porch swing ain't too comfortable to sit on.
No.
Like that. But you know what you can do? You can take a piece of plywood and you can build a little overlay that it makes it even with the floor. Sure. And that's what a dental orthotic does. That's right. All in your muscle. Right.
Oh, this is so good. You're so good at explaining this, Mac.
Right.
I just love it.
So this next question, this is, what's the difference? I get this a lot. What's the difference between an over-the-counter guard or guard another dentist has made and a neuromuscular guard that Priya and I and you have made? What's the difference?
The difference is what I just explained with the swing, is that when you have disharmony between the relationship of the upper jaw and the lower jaw, whether it is the jaw's like this, it's like this, or it's too far back, or it's not forward, then the precision made neuromuscular orthotic is going to compensate for any of the deficiencies that the relationship between the upper and the lower jaw have, no matter what those deficiencies are. So that porch swing can be way down like this, or it could be like this. You can't go to Walmart and buy an overlay that's going to precisionally make that porch swing even. You've got to have a skilled carpenter to make it even. to make this relationship balance with this, you got to have a skilled dentist that understands the participation of the parts, everything, muscles, joint, teeth, pitch, roll, jaw of the mandible versus the maxilla. They all have to fit. So the difference in one word, precision.
That's good. I like that. And I like the porch swing analogy, because if the porch swing is like this and you get an over-the-counter night guard or even a night guard that your dentist makes, that's not a neuromuscular orthotic. It's basically just putting a piece of plastic.
That's right. You're exactly right.
Yeah. Exactly. Whereas a neuromuscular orthotic will balance everything. And so that's such a good analogy, because my mentor always said a dental night guard is like reading glasses, whereas a neuromuscular orthotic is like prescription glasses. You need precise measurements. But I like the porch swing even more because it can imitate the jaw, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, I love it, Max. I'm going to use that.
Yeah. But then the other thing too that I tell my patients is that when you buy an over-the-counter guard, or most dentists, I don't want to round everybody in that, but most dentists make a mouth guard. They'll take a piece of plastic that is like what you said. It's the same thickness all the way around.
Yes.
And then they'll melt it over your teeth. So if it was 3 millimeters thick, it's still 3 millimeters thick. Whereas a neuromuscular guard, you might need 5 millimeters on one side and only 2 on the other to balance that porch swing, balance that jaw out. Yeah.
And when they take the bite, the stuff they squeeze in between your teeth, they take it with the teeth touching. Well, you're not, that's not precision at all, because you're just recreating what they already had. So what we do is we take our bites in space so that you can move this jaw anywhere that you want to. And that's why you want the orthotic to be on the lower jaw and not the upper jaw.
Right.
I love this. I'm going to like use all this terminology from here onwards, because the way I explain it, I feel like it's still not clear enough, but I love the porch swing. Sorry, I'm still on that.
But it's a good thing to be on.
Yeah.
Because it does get the point across.
I remember what Alex said when we finished with her 2-day session, but I can't repeat it.
Oh.
You remember it?
Now I have to know. I wasn't there.
You can repeat it, Matt. Yeah,
She was No, I'm gonna let you repeat it. You said it, so I'll let you.
No. I'm trying to wear my lady on air. I'm trying to be my lady,
She was very upset at the very ending of our 2-day session, and I mean, she was very upset, and I was a little shocked. And she said, "I am just so blankety blank because I didn't do this years before."
Yeah. Yeah, it was the F word. I said the F word. I was effing pissed. That's right. Because there's so much, and we keep learning. And that's the good thing about, and what makes neuromuscular dentistry, I think, so exciting, is because we keep learning and we keep connecting the dots and we keep finding out, oh, well, this myofascial therapist can help, or this myofunctional therapist can help. We keep connecting the dots and try to find answers for our patients. And and our successes are high because we want to get you better.
Yeah.
And,
we're very invested in our patients, I think. And I was thinking maybe we could answer one more question, because we just put it out on our stories on Instagram and I did get a question. So that's kind of what I've been looking at. I just thought we could all take our turns answering. So I can go
last. Okay, good.
So here's the question. Mac, you can go first, then Alex, then me. So have you ever been able to reduce a chronic disc displacement without reduction?
I can't say that you're going down a rabbit hole when you're talking about it.
I know. I'm sorry. That's why I did it. Because I think these are things that people want to know.
But the public needs to understand too, is that disc can either be where it's supposed to be on top. It can be to the left. It can be to the right. It can be in front. It can be in back. The disc itself can be deteriorated. It can be, think of a lifesaver, the candy lifesaver. And you know, it's popping on and off that lifesaver. Well, if you've tried to suck on the lifesaver, but you only suck the front of it, and you've completely changed the morphology of that lifesaver, it just changes everything. And I've been doing a lot of study on this about taking MRIs, and MRI is really the only way that you can find where the disc is, but it still is incomplete compared to the total picture. All you have to do is dissect the TMJ and see how complicated all that is. So the thing is, if you're not in pain and you have mobility of the mandible and everything works, what difference does it make?
Yes, exactly. Good point. Yeah.
You know, we want to get wrapped up in what the disc is doing instead of getting wrapped up in the patient being comfortable. And we're all into terminology and all of this other stuff, reduction, non-reduction, lateral pole, medial pole, this ligament, that ligament ends versus how are you feeling? Things working okay? Can you function okay? Good. Let's stop right there. Because I did learn one thing. When you are equilibrating an orthotic and you're having trouble adjusting it, or because it's here and here and all the way around, is that when you do that tiny adjustment and the patient closes their eyes, puts their head down and taps, 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 and they start going like this, that's when you quit. Don't touch it. If they're comfortable, don't touch it, because you're going to lose the bite. You have a chance of losing the bite. And we dentists want to be too perfect. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be too perfect. It looks like one, you know, even on the T-scan, well, you're a little uneven here. You know, you're 48% versus, you know, how does it feel? How does it feel?
That's a good point.
And
what about you, Alex?
We shoot ourselves in the foot.
Have you ever been able to reduce a chronic disc displacement without reduction? That's the exact question.
Yeah, I'm with Mac. The success rate in my office is extremely high. And we do obviously do diagnoses. And I'm sure within there we have. I've been doing this for over 20 years. I can't think of a patient like right off the top of my head. But when you listen to all of the patient's signs, symptoms, movement of the joint, the clicking, we're almost always able to reduce the click unless it's a very late opening click.
Yeah. Sometimes those are the hard ones.
Yeah, those are hard. And I can't think that we haven't. You know, I know that I can't think of a patient though that my mind goes like, oh, there, yeah, right there. But I know we've had all sorts of diagnosis and all sorts of complications. And when you relax the muscles with the TENS unit to take a bite and you're using other things in the office like red light therapy or laser therapy or beamer therapy to also relax, things just loosen up and that disc just finds its way back on top of that condyle with the proper bite.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what about you,
Priya? And when you have patients with condylectomies where they don't even have a condyle, it just
I've had those.
Yeah. Then what?
Then you're listening to the muscle and I've had those and they work out just fine and get out of pain just fine.
They feel good at the end of it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I've had two cases I can think of off the bat that were locked. The disc was displaced without reduction for 2 years. So I consider that chronic. I consider anything over 6 months chronic.
Because,
the disc will start to change shape. And like Max said, if it's torn or broken in half, you're not going to recapture that disc. I've had it where it hasn't worked out, where we could not recapture the disc. And then the MRI ended up showing that it was actually torn. Mm-hmm. And then I've had it where we have been able to, but like those cases, I mean, they took like a year of treatment. It's not, you're not going to recapture that disc a week in. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The disc has changed shape. But the cool thing about the disc is if it hasn't completely torn, it's made out of a cartilage that can change shape. So it can change back. You just have to give it time and the proper treatment. So I can think of two cases. And we also have over 90% success rate with recapturing the disc. But I will say that for one of the chronic disc displacement without reduction, we did not get her. We got her to disc displacement with reduction. So we got her clicking and popping again and open more, but and out of pain. But we didn't completely recapture the disc where there was no clicking and popping.
Right.
So I mean, there's point. Like Max said, you kind of have to know when to stop.
Right.
Right.
And there was. I don't know if either of you saw this email from Ira the other day about the success rate of orthopedic surgeons and what they consider 40%. Success. What was it, Mac?
40%.
Right. 40%. Now, would you accept 40% success rate in your office? But orthopedic surgeons do, and they get paid. And insurance doesn't cover us.
That's why I referred some of my pay. That's why I referred patients when I was still doing CR dentistry. But I have another visual for you that I came up with. Okay, so you have the pterygoid muscles that attach to the disc, and then you have the retrodiscal ligaments that are attached from the right next to where the ear is in the skull. And so really that ligament and the pterygoid muscles are playing, when you pull the rope, what do you call it?
Tug of war.
Yeah. They're playing the tug of war with a disc. And you know, so the disc is at the mercy of this muscle pulling this ligament pulling this, and then the jaw going this way and the jaw going that way. And you know, you have one jaw with two joints, and you can't move this jaw without moving both joints. You can't pick up a stick without picking up both ends. So it is so complicated. And if you don't have a dentist to sit in there listening to you and watching how you talk and watching all these things and feeling around your joints and feeling your muscles and back of your neck, if you don't have a dentist like that, then all you're going to get is that appliance that they just, it's just a piece of plastic. It's a pop, mm-hmm. POP, piece of plastic. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Instead of having something that's very beautifully anatomically made.
Yeah. I like that POP too.
Piece of plastic. Like everything you're saying, Matt. I think you need to come to my office.
Yeah. Well, all right.
Well,
thanks for joining us for our new podcast
of
Unclenched. We appreciate it.
Great job and great idea. I think these podcasts, I've been listening to some even in the UK. I was listening to them yesterday working in the garden. And, you know, there's a lot of dentists are still on the same wavelength that we're on. And so I'm going to try to get in touch with them because we need to get a whole network of dentists that are talking about this because the public needs to know.
Yes, they do.
And dentists need to know. ENTs need to know. Neurologists need to know.
All of them.
The whole world.
The whole world.
Oh my goodness. All right.
Well, this was really fun. I guess we should sign off now and, you know, stay tuned for the next podcast, everyone.
All right. Thanks. We'll see you, Priya. Bye, Mac.
Bye, everyone.
See ya.